I really do believe that we're heading in a really positive direction. I really, really strive to ensure that our junior soldiers have a voice, and junior officers, no matter what the rank, being valued is feeling like you're heard. All these things that have become normal for a professional athlete is what I would expect to see for our athletes in the army, because ultimately we're all part of one high performing team. All these marginal gains are important to help us perform, whether it's in our day job, on a sports field, at a laptop, or out on the front line. What I've learnt in the army, and it links back to feeling valued, is making sure that everybody understands the purpose of being in your team. What's your goal? What are you trying to achieve? And then part of having that goal and your purpose is understanding what your part is to play in it.
Major Joe Van is a netball legend, a former England Roses and Team Bath player. She's a coach, inspirational speaker, impressive leader, and businesswoman, all while juggling a busy family life. Jo constantly challenges herself, and yet she's determined to help develop others. She's a really strong desire to pass on what she's learned, because this is where she finds the richest rewards. Jo seems to be in a hurry to make the best use of her time on this planet. But when I talked to her, time seemed to slow down while her wisdom, positivity, and energy filled the studio. I'm Lindsay McDuff, the Culture Colonel, and this is my conversation with Jo.
Sport has been part of my whole life. I grew up on Dartmoor and just lived as much of my life outside as possible. We were in the middle of nowhere. I was one of four children, very active parents, a lot of outdoor play, a lot of exploration. Mm-hmm. I travelled every day into Exeter to go to school. I had some really inspirational teachers, two of which had represented their own sports for England.
Wow.
I was really taken aback by how much time they were able to put into those of us that really had big aspirations to go places with a sport. It helped me realise that the more you practice, the better you get. Looking back, I wasn't necessarily the most natural athlete, but I knew that if I worked really hard, then I'd have a better chance of achieving some goals. I was quite inspired by people like Sally Gunnell at the time and Denise Lewis, and saw them winning medals. And I thought, I'd like to do something for my country. Didn't really know what it would be, but it became netball at the age of 14. I represented Maynard School at the national finals and was invited to attend the England Netball Talent Pathway. And went on that journey, did a lot of travel across the southwest, learned a huge amount about having to get organised to be able to balance that with my studies. And then went to England under 17s, England under 19s, and then got to represent England under 21s at the World Youth Championships.
Really? Living on Dartmoor, I mean, you can almost not talk about Dartmoor without talking about the 10 tours. Was that something that was instrumental in your life? Did it play a part in your early growing formative years?
The 10 tours is an incredible event which happens once a year. It brings together teams of six people from a huge amount of schools, all aspiring to complete either 35 miles or 45 miles or 55 miles over the weekend. And you stay overnight on the Friday night at Okehampton Camp, and early morning on Saturday, you have this incredibly inspiring speech, really motivated, all the energy, and then you're off carrying what you need for the duration of your expedition. Mm-hmm. And you're there with your teammates and you've got a map and a route. It can feel isolating, but at the same time there's this incredible support offered by the army, the forces out there on the tours, so you feel part of something really magnificent, which ultimately helps form who you are as a person, and you gain confidence from that, you develop amazing skills and a love for the outdoors. And that definitely gave me the bug that thought that one day I would be interested in joining the army.
Do you do this regularly? Is it once a year, and have you done it every year, or is it just over a particular period of time when you're at school?
It's a particular time at school, but growing up nearby, we became part of the support and the community that would be there cheering on the other teams. Myself, I attempted it at the first opportunity that I had. And because of my commitments to netball, I didn't attend all the training that I needed to make the school team. I was desperate to still do it. And the opportunity came up where an all-boys team needed somebody else to make it to the start line. And I volunteered.
This wasn't on the day, was it?
No, I think it was a couple of days before.
Okay, so you had a little bit of time to prepare.
Yeah, I hadn't met them. I hadn't been able to train with them.
Really?
I met them on the Friday evening. And then the following day, we were off. I had to very quickly build a lot of trust in each other, work together to make sure that we stayed as a team, because you need a minimum of four people to continue. Mm-hmm. I relied on my mental resilience to get me through, and partly driven by not wanting to let the side down. Mm-hmm. How I felt in that moment was there was probably a little bit of a spotlight on me being the only girl. Mm. That strength and that drive to not want to let the side down. We did manage to complete it. Those experiences, which at the time were pretty overwhelming, but I look back and I think that's helped shape me for who I am.
What you're describing there is about how teams work and operate effectively together. You talked about your netball career, and you were doing this all the time knowing that this wasn't going to be your career, because in those days it wasn't possible for it to be a career.
There was no potential to be a professional netball player. Mm. So I always felt that I would need to have a career alongside my sport, which really felt was a hobby.
So you were studying hard. Had you thought what you might be doing after you finish your studies?
I had an idea. I think the original plan was to continue studying to become a physiotherapist. Mm-hmm. But there was this real draw to wanting to be more outdoors. Mm-hmm. And the more I played netball, which became much more of an indoor sport, the more I missed being able to go on those adventures and be much more connected with nature. Mm-hmm. When I was at university, I did a undergraduate army placement. I had this amazing experience for a year where I did a short course at Sandhurst. It's now called the internship. Then you have this absolute privilege of being able to command soldiers. I loved it. I got a huge amount of responsibility and was trusted to work alongside these incredibly trained individuals and help form part of that team. Following that, I did take a role working for England Netball and University of Bath, mentoring young athletes, mentoring and developing other coaches. So I did that for 3 years. During that role, I gained this real love of being able to help other people develop. And part of that was for about 3 to 4 weeks in the year, I travelled to Africa, Lesotho, Botswana, different countries each year, and help develop their netball programs. And that love of humanitarian support enabled me to realize what my real passion was. And then that seemed to start to steer me back towards the army, where I really wanted to serve. And at the age of 27, which is quite late, I decided that if I didn't join then, I would really regret it. I went for it and found myself at Sandhurst that year.
And at that point, did you know which part of the army you wanted to join or not?
I didn't initially. I had some ideas. Mm. I think I was looking for even more of a challenge, mm-hmm. because I had had that previous experience. And I stumbled across the role as an aviation officer while I was at Sandhurst. It ticked every box for me. An amazing command of, effectively, for most troop commanders, your first job out of Sandhurst, platoon commanders, you're part of a squadron where you have three of your teams and you're one of three peers that are going through similar experiences in your first role. In the Army Air Corps, there was just one of me responsible for the soldiers. So I felt it was, in a way, more challenging, and had the responsibility of working alongside the Apache and the incredible aircraft and the training that went alongside that out in the desert. We went to America for 3 months before deploying to Afghanistan. I'm really pleased with the choice. I really, at that point, only planned to stay for 3 years, but have loved it.
That resonates with me, because I initially
decided to join the army for 3 years, but math was never my strong point, so I stayed for much longer than I planned. Mostly because I really love the opportunities that we have when you change job every 2 to 3 years. And has that continued for you?
It really has. As time has gone on, the 2 years seem to go quicker each time. And there have been moments where I've thought, it would help if I could stay put for longer. So a little bit of craving, a little bit of stability as time has gone on. But I've been really fortunate. I'm part of a serving couple, my husband serving as well. And we have felt supported in managing to keep our family stable for a number of years now.
I know you like challenges. It's really clear that you love challenges. Is part of that challenging yourself whilst you're also doing this highly challenging day job in the Army Air Corps? You're also still playing netball and or coaching.
I feel a really strong desire to be able to pass on what was given to me. We had an incredible coach called Lynn Gunson, who was there from the start of Team Bath. And she brought a culture that we learned so much from and feel a huge responsibility to pass that on. It helped me gain a huge amount of skills, but passing it on is actually the rewarding bit. So yeah, I support where I can. Time is limited, but I'm involved with netball, both at club level and for the army.
And does that mean that you're annoyingly and enormously efficient and brilliant at prioritisation? How do you manage all of that with limited time?
It's incredibly hard to manage my schedule and I don't always get it right. There's a fine line between maximising the time that we have on this planet and just not resting enough. And that's a big education for me. I'm far, far from having refined that balance, and I'm learning as I go. But there are certain things that I rely on hugely to help get me through the hard times. One is my family. Another one is my faith, just having an outlet and being able to be out in nature as well. All things I need to remind myself to do more of.
Are you good at reminding yourself? Because I'm not very good at reminding myself. I'm lucky that I have others who know me well, and they can spot when I perhaps need to take a pause and reflect. There's a degree of self-awareness that's needed for that. Is that what you have, or do you have people who are helpful in reminding you that you need to perhaps have a break or a pause?
I do have both, but the trouble is when people tend to say slow down or I don't recommend you do that, that hits a button with me that gives this driving force to say, I can do it. It makes me want to sometimes prove them wrong and sometimes prove to myself that I can get through this. It's a balance, and I'm not that good at it.
You talked earlier about good culture in the Team Bath netball group. How was that created? It's not just the good culture, but then the motivation to want to pass it on.
I often think about this, and I don't think it's necessarily one single thing. I think we were all part of something that we believed to be much bigger than ourselves. It was a real privilege at the time. It was groundbreaking in what we were doing and the opportunities that we had. There's one other component that I think ties us all together with a little bit of glue, which is we, to some extent, we felt a little bit like misfits. We were all so different. And I think at the time, and looking back, as a culture, that really drew us together because absolutely celebrated difference. And I've taken that into many other things or noticed when it doesn't exist in other areas of life, because it's so valuable to build a really strong team, being able to value everybody for what they brought in a different way. And one example in netball is just recognising that if you have a number of people that can play centre, but if they can play it all differently, then that's a strength. I had another experience in another team where I felt like I was trying to be shaped into replacing the person that had previously been there, rather than using my strengths in the way that I brought something different. That was really, really fulfilling. And in terms of feeling valued and being able to value other people in the team, it was quite special.
What a wonderful thing to be part of. And I think from my experience being in teams in the military where that difference is valued and that your unique knowledge and expertise contributes to enhancing the productivity and the performance of the team. Have you seen that work well in the military environment as well? And not necessarily just on operations. I think that's where we tend to think that's why it works really well. But oftentimes it's when we're not in operations that the need for high-performing teams to be productive is much greater.
I have seen many examples. And as an overall trend, I really do believe that we're heading in a really positive direction. I really, really strive to ensure that our junior soldiers have a voice and junior officers, no matter what the rank, being valued is feeling like you're heard.
Mm.
That is something which varies depending on your team. But in general, it is a core component of the Army's teamwork, and the work that goes into that now, it is going to really, really pay off. And I think the importance of people understanding that everybody can contribute something. It may be different. It may be a contrary opinion to what you think, but it's really important to listen to it and consider it.
And that leads to challenge as well, because the best solutions often are born out of challenge. And presumably that's something that was embedded in how you approached success in the netball arena. Have you seen that translated in your work with the Army?
It's definitely been how we were brought up in Team Bath. We loved doing things differently. And it has definitely translated. I think one of my fondest memories of being in Army headquarters was the opportunity to be part of the Director Personnel Wargaming Programme. A chance to really challenge the norms and think outside the box and challenge our barriers and consider paths for policy changes that would dramatically make lives for the people in the Army better. Those experiences for me gave me such freedom in thinking and a trusting environment where even if anybody in the room came up with what could have been a silly idea, it was really valued. And as a result of that, you could see that some incredible ideas were taken away. And a really diverse group, loads of different experiences. I really hope the soldiers that came in had a really positive experience from that as well. They certainly added so much value because it really has shaped what will come in the future. But even just being alongside occupational psychologists and knowing that the investment going into those thought processes to make sure that the future of the Army is going to be great is really reassuring.
And to create the conditions for that to happen in the room where people felt that is fundamental to enabling these innovative and thoughtful conversations to happen in what effectively is a safe space. And oftentimes in hierarchical organisations, there's a sense that that's not always the case. You've talked about remarkable and successful challenges that you've overcome, but you also doing a whole bunch of other things that we haven't even talked about yet. I think you've got yourself into the hospitality sector as well, which, again, just sounds like another challenge to fit in a limited amount of time. Can you talk a bit about how that happened?
Yeah, I think looking back, it really started about 3 years ago. And quite honestly, at that time, I was struggling with finding the right balance for the family, questioning whether staying in the Army was the right choice for me, whether it was the right choice for the family. So I did, in my spare time, look into developing some other skills and knowledge, really, about how I could create a business which would be able to give back to other people, aim to employ a number of local people, and have something that I was at the time considering leaving to go and do. As it turned out, the hotel that we now own and have developed the brand, A Little Place, over a number of years, has been incredibly rewarding. It has been hard work, but I have loved being able to shape the culture, which has really been my priority in amongst the team, because they have the skills and the knowledge to be able to run the business and learn how, I think the reality of actually how much I have learnt through all my leadership training in the army and being able to share that with people. I ended up deciding that I actually really wanted to stay in the army for many reasons. One being that I was really fortunate to benefit from a time where policy was changing around supporting flexible working. It's given me some time to catch my breath in the evenings or a weekend and offer me the stability to make sure that the business could start up. And now it's running.
Wow. And I think you're off to do another exciting job shortly. Another, I'd say, army job rather than one of the other many things that you do.
I'll be starting at 6th Regiment Army Air Corps, which I'm so excited about. It's our reserve regiment, and I'll be the regimental second in command. So just to return to regimental duty and have those interactions with our people will be good fun.
How do you create a cohesive team, both from the netball perspective, but also from your experience in the army?
I think what I've learnt in the army, and it links back to feeling valued, is making sure that everybody understands the purpose of being in your team. What's your goal? What are you trying to achieve? And then part of having that goal and your purpose is understanding what your part is to play in it. In my hotel business, I have an amazing team of housekeepers. We agreed that everybody has their main purpose of fulfilling that role, but they also have an additional specific purpose, which is their speciality, whether that's the garden or engaging with our local businesses to make sure that they can feel supported by what we're doing as well. And then ultimately, we're all heading in the same direction. It's so important to hear ideas and also embrace their skills. I do what the army does now, which is focus on their skills. One other thing I found really impactful in helping that team become cohesive is about helping measure success of the culture and understanding our start point. Because if we all have a different belief as to where we are in terms of our culture, it's quite hard to head in the same direction. I really believe that the teamwork initiative that's happening in the army is brilliant. The next step of that is thinking about the frequency of how are we measuring our culture so that we can have a really specific goal in terms of what are we working to improve. And it's hard to do that as a huge organisation, but the army is made up of a number of teams at various levels. So I think that's one of the areas I really enjoy exploring more is what does culture look like now and where do you want to get it to?
Part of that is about recognising that not everyone is going to be at the same place and point. Teams are developing and changing and evolving. And it requires a ruthless scrutiny and an honesty in order then that you know where you are, you can work out how you can move together to improve the culture and the performance.
That honesty is so important, and it's hard. And ultimately, it comes down to creating that safe space where people feel comfortable with saying things that may land not how you would first expect. Being on the receiving end of that, welcoming that feedback, being in the Army Air Corps, it's at the forefront of our thinking. How we can learn from mistakes, other people's mistakes, something that might not be related, you can still learn from it, but also report something before it becomes an issue. And most importantly, acting on them, which ultimately means that the person that's reported it feels valued and they're more likely to report something again.
As an elite athlete, success and challenge go hand in hand. Compounding and sometimes complicating that is injury. There are very few elite athletes who won't have had an experience of injury and the recovery process, and it can be unexpected and difficult. Has that been your experience?
As with most things that have gone wrong, I often look back on them and I think I'm better having had that experience. Really difficult to support people through injuries in the moment because the disappointment that comes with it. I had a stress fracture in my foot and I found out a couple of weeks before my very first opportunity to tour to Australia as a 20-year-old. And it would have been incredible. Instead, Team Bath offered me a seat on the flight to South Africa. I went as a player under rehabilitation, effectively. Mm. I wasn't able to play all the games.
Mm.
But that experience was incredible because I learned what it meant to be on a tour, the intensity of it, the relentless nature of back-to-back training, mm. being away from home, living out of hotels, all of that. If I were to look back at the toughest times in that campaign, looking at my foot recovery, it all came down to commitment to knowing that if I could get through this in time, then I had something really great to be rewarded with if I could make the team. I had an incredible coach who encouraged me to cut up a little TheraBand, which people are probably familiar mm. with, for training their ankles. And instead, I had a minute version, which I had to train my toes. Tiny, tiny activities, but 5 times a day. It made me stronger, but mentally made me stronger because I wasn't going to quit. What I did learn at Team Bath was how to use alternative ways to train. And I loved it so much, I ended up doing my dissertation in it, which was at university. I studied the impact of running in water compared to on land.
Mm-hmm.
It was great because the outcome proved that what you're generating from your muscles is far stronger against the resistance of the water than it would be on land. So all I did was take all my netball training into the pool. I was the strongest I've ever been. My core became so strong that I now have treatment with physios trying to help relax it.
That's been used widely now as a means to recover. And you quietly feel a wee bit proud about that.
I am proud. I mean, that was in 2004, 2005. It shows what Team Bath is about at that time. Jed Roddy, who helped build that whole facility, made sure that there was a hydrotherapy pool in there for reasons like that. It's incredible what was happening at that time. And I feel so grateful to have had those opportunities.
Sport, as you've said, has been a really instrumental part of your life, and it's still fundamental to your life. In the last 5 years or so, there's been massive change, massive progress in women's sport particularly. And I'm not just talking about the Lionesses, but more broadly across sport. And I know that the Netball Super League is just going through a pretty radical change, which has had catastrophic implications for Team Bath Netball. The changes that have happened have benefited many women. How is that different for you?
The changes that England Netball have made around the new Super League are largely driven about giving people an opportunity to become professional netball players. And although I wasn't even on the bow wave as a player, these decisions will absolutely affect my generation as coaches and the whole sport, which we're clearly really passionate about. The timing of the decision and the opportunities financially have meant that to enable these offers for jobs for players have been limited by number. So the number of teams in the Super League have been reduced. From the commercial aspect, I fully understand that to make it sustainable, they set a requirement for a certain level of spectators to be able to view the games. It is devastating that Team Bath didn't meet that criteria. It is perhaps surprising to England Netball just how significant that impact is.
Mm.
And having lived and breathed netball in the Southwest my whole life, just naturally by the nature of the geography of the commitments that people were making to travel to be connected with the England Netball programme or the Super League itself, and the commitment of the fans to travel 5 hours from Cornwall to get to a Super League fixture, it is devastating because they're currently won't be a Super League team in our region. Ultimately, we've got a pathway which still exists, full of athletes, incredibly talented, that have worked so hard, and so many that are knocking on the door of those academy development centres. The best thing we can do is pivot our energy towards making sure that they have a future. How we do that yet, it's unknown. We're really driven and passionate about making sure that those opportunities can continue.
That drive and passion that you talk about, I think, is also captured in the work that you do coaching with the Army Netball team. If you had a crystal ball and forecast the future you wanted to look like for women's sport in the Army, what would that look like?
I think that the journey that netball goes on in a civilian world will ultimately have some likenesses across into the army. So we have incredible opportunities in general for elite athletes. There's a number of programs that the army offers to enable people to work alongside their training. One area which I'm interested in exploring is how we can make sure that the lifestyle of the coaches and the athletes, as we're trying to grow more coaches, military coaches to coach them, how can we support their lifestyle so that some of that team training doesn't always need to happen at a weekend? Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, as I have experienced in a number of my roles, it can become a 7-day week. Mm-hmm. And how do we retain and encourage people to want to do those amazing representative opportunities whilst not having to do that at a cost to the family or seeing their children on a weekend? There's a number of things to consider. One is, from an individual point of view, ensuring that we build in important recovery time so that on a Monday morning they don't feel fatigued from having trained for 2 or 3 days. How do we look at physical recovery? We have some incredible facilities, and just getting the leadership to understand that it's important to give time to go and do a pool session. So all these things that have become normal for a professional athlete is what I would expect to see for our athletes in the army. Because ultimately, we're all part of one high-performing team. All these marginal gains are important to help us perform, whether it's in our day job, on a sports field, at a laptop, or out on the front line.
Jo identifies the importance of being valued and hearing different voices. She's clear about the impact this has on creating positive cultures, that this generates high-performing teams where everyone thrives. This episode felt like therapy for me. I've listened to it again and again, and each time I find more flowers of leadership wisdom. I was struck by how many relevant lessons there are between sport and service, and how to get the best from everyone in your team. Please let me know what resonated for you and why. And if you know someone who you think would enjoy hearing what Jo has to say, do send them a link to this episode. Take care until next time.